Today is Sunday, August 1st,
2021. This is part 19 of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Jim Haggart, last name spelled H-A-G-G-A-R-T. My name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Jim. How are you today?
I'm doing excellent, Tom. How about you?
Very good. Thank you. Jim, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Yes, please. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. In our last interview, you took us on a wonderful journey out around Mount Sinala, in sort of the central part of Grand Canyon, south side of the river, around the Great Thumb area, in the spring of 2004. And that was a wonderful journey. Now it's 2005, it's March, and you're going to take a journey into East Clear Creek. Can you tell me about that?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, this was this is an area that was one of the first hikes I ever did in the Grand Canyon. I went with my friend Chris Beal, and we hiked from Hermit Creek to, well, actually from Monument Creek to Clear Creek in one day. And on our first Grand Canyon hike, and it was, I'd always wanted to get back in there. I did some other brief forays into there, but, you know, Clear Creek's got some big drainages, big arms in it, and so that's always been a popular destination. And, but this trip, however, was not originally designed to be a trip to Clear Creek or, you know, staying in Clear Creek. That's the way it turned out, as we'll talk about, but the plan that Art and Bruce Grubbs and I had in the spring of 2005 was that we were going to pass through Clear Creek and head over to Vishnu. And the objective here was going to be to try and get as many summits, okay, like Newberry and Krishna and Rama Shrine and whatnot in the Vishnu area as we could, right?
Yeah.
And so... you know, we had a little over a week of time budgeted for this, and the anticipation was we'd spend a day or so on the Tonto and to get over there, and then, you know, climb as many as we could, and then come back. But unfortunately, the fates conspired against us, as they so often have, you know. And by the time we got down to to the Phantom Ranch there, I remember Bruce was having some soreness, and we decided to take it easy on the hike over to Clear Creek. So the plan was originally to go to Clear Creek in one day and maybe a little farther, but we just decided to camp at Sumner Wash, of course, which is just above the above Phantom Ranch there on the trail over to Clear Creek. And there's often water pocket there in the spring season or after a heavy rain, and nice slabs that you can camp on. But it's kind of open. I mean, you're right there, close to anybody passing by on the Clear Creek Trail, which does get a fair amount of traffic. So it's not the best place to camp, but we decided to go to stay there anyways the first day to try and, you know, help Bruce accommodate and acclimate to his problems there with his back. So we spent the night there, had some potential rain showers, so we set up the fly, but slept out under the stars, as you can so often do, and got up the next morning and decided to head over to, and, you know, continued over to Clear Creek. And I remember we got a big downpour right where you start down into Clear Creek, off the Tonto. And there's a big overhang of Shinimo quartzite, I think, a huge overhang that we were able to shelter under. And unfortunately, it's a very shallow overhang, and if there's a wind, you know, you're not going to get much protection in there. But this was a fairly gentle rain. And anyways, we got down to Clear Creek, and we hiked down to the junction between the main arm that goes to the north, and then the eastern arm that goes up under Cape Royal. And Bruce was really having problems with his back, so I said, look, there's plenty of things to do in Clear Creek, right, in the Clear Creek Basin.
Yeah.
Let's just hang out here. We'll day hike out of Clear Creek, and Bruce can, you know, participate as little or as much as he wants to.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody agreed that was a great idea, and so we settled in there, and the rest of that day, Art and I spent hiking up Clear Creek up the east arm of Clear Creek to just under Cape Royal, and I don't know if you've been up there, but it's a spectacular place.
No,
you realize you're like 3,000 feet below Cape Royal.
Mm.
And only 2,000 feet horizontally from it. I mean, it's just really the panorama, the cliffs going straight up are really impressive. So it's a very neat creek to climb up into, and there was all sorts of water in there. We had put out water bags in the tapetes to lay in the sun and warm up so that we could take a shower on the way back, you know, and that was quite comforting, and so it was really nice, just a relaxing day, right? And so that was our first day in Clear Creek, and then the next day it was going to be Art and I just going solo because Bruce just didn't feel like he was up for it. So Art and I thought, well, let's try and climb the Howlands Butte.
Okay.
And I think you've been up the Howlands.
Yeah.
And yeah, really nice climb.
Yeah.
One of my favorites, actually.
Yeah.
And so we were able to climb up to the Tonto platform just east of our camp, which was at near the junction of the two arms of Clear Creek. And we'd walked by that break the day before when we hiked up to the upper end of the east arm of Clear Creek.
Mm-hmm.
And so we saw that, and we knew that we could easily get up there. And in fact, I think Art and Barb Zinn had done a long trip like 20 years before this, where they went from Nanquip to Bright Angel, and they had actually come down this drainage after going around Howlands Butte. So anyways, we headed up that, Art and I, and I remember that when we walked along the Tonto platform, along the west side of Howlands Butte, it was one of these weird experiences. There was water coming out of the shale just about everywhere. You would see these little, you know, pools and rivulets of water. Of course, it's a very transitory phenomenon, right?
Yeah.
And presumably related to recent precipitation and a good snowpack or whatever, you know, during the winter. But it was just one of those kind of interesting experiences where, you know, water is everywhere in the Grand Canyon, and it was just kind of really kind of neat. We'd seen that once or twice before, as we've talked about in the past here over on the Esplanade, and it's just kind of unusual to be walking along the Grand Canyon on a bright sunny day, and you're just coated with mud because you can't stay out of the water on the Tonto platform. So. But anyways, we continued around the west side of the Howlands Butte, and when we got around to the southwest point there, the southwest corner, you know, we looked up and we thought, well, this doesn't look like too much of a challenge here, and you know you had to work your way up the slope, as you know, and then you traverse back over to the ridge that goes up through the red wall, and I just remember just loving the climb because it was steep enough that you had lots of exposure, but it was just simple. It was just very simple, right? Lots of big holes here, everywhere you needed. You reach up and there'd be a big hole, and so a real satisfying climb. And I hadn't done too many summits at that point, so I was quite pleased to have captured this one, and I remember we got to the summit because once you get up the red wall, you have to traverse a short distance, and then you can work your way up the final shale slopes to the summit, which is I guess in Hermit Shale, but maybe Basal Supai Sandstone. A couple had been in there. Some guys had been in there just a couple weeks before us, according to the register. So we were kind of surprised at that because, even in 2005, finding evidence of recent ascents was fairly uncommon, you know. So I mean, we talked a couple weeks ago about how when Art and I did Mount Aqaba, we found out that George Bain had been up there like the week before us. And, you know, it was like, you know, who comes out to these places, right? and so you find out. But anyways, a really satisfying climb. And then we hiked, we reversed our route back down to the Tonto, and then worked our way around and went up the notch between the Howlands Butte and the Angels Gate. So there's okay. You can work your way up there. It's just a steep gully climb, and then came back down the north side of that. And there's, I remember all this very lush grass, like knee-high grass.
Wow.
And green. And it was, yeah, and it, because it was in the shade, it had all this dew on it, even in the late morning, you know, when we were coming back down from this. So really very kind of unusual. But just goes to show you what, you know, the combination of shade and moisture can provide you in the canyon.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so we just kind of reversed our way back down and hiked back to Bruce, joined Bruce at the camp. So it was a, you know, fairly straightforward morning and actually day. We just had a relaxed day at the whole thing. So, but the next day was a bigger one. We definitely bit off a lot here because we decided we wanted to go up the red wall that you use to go up to Angel's Gate and from Clear Creek. So this is. I'm not sure if you've been up this climb, but this goes up the east. You hike up the east arm of Clear Creek a kilometer or so, and there's a break that we had found. We had noted from our walk up the east arm of Clear Creek the 2 days before, a really nice break that goes up through the Tonto.
Right.
And in fact, there's a beautiful deer trail in there, maybe in, you know, burrows when they were active in that area. But a really nice trail laid out with switchbacks to get you through the Tapetes. Yeah, quite interesting. And then from there, you start heading up and up this drainage that takes you up to the notch between Wotan's Throne and Angel's Gate.
Right.
And so we knew this had been done by Dave Gansey and Chuck Graff.
Yes.
When they did the first ascent of Wotan's Throne. In fact, I think I might have told you in an earlier discussion about how I had done a trip into Clear Creek, my second trip into Clear Creek, maybe the third trip I did in the canyon, and I did it with two young ladies, and we ran into Chuck Graff and Dave Gansey coming back from their first ascent of Angel's Gate.
Hmm.
So we chatted to them on the Clear Creek trail, and they kind of explained the way they had gotten up through there. So that had been a long time before, right? So that was in the early 70s. But anyways, we knew this route went, and it's still challenging enough, right? And you know, it's really kind of very cool the way it all unfolds, and you wind up climbing up this little riblet, I guess, next to a little slot chimney, and this, you know, just enough holds to make it interesting and enough exposure. So, but it goes quite easily, and you just have to put in the time to get up there. So from the summit of the red wall, then, you know, this is a day hike, so we just had our light packs and plenty of water. So from there, then we started following the red wall around the east side of Angel's Gate and Dunn Butte, looking up, of course, at any route opportunities that might exist, particularly on Dunn, because that's a very formidable climb that goes at a fairly high standard, mostly with it. Most people have done it with aid.
Hmm.
But we wanted the much easier destination of Hawkins Butte,
right,
which is a Supai Butte right out at the end of the ridge there, south of Angel's Gate. And, I mean, this is an easy second class two climb, right? There's nothing. It's just hiking to get to it. But it's out there. It's in a very, you know, fairly remote area. And so we wanted to get out there. And on top of that, Art at this point was kind of researching informally the Powell expeditions.
Okay.
And learning what he could about, you know, the other members of the expeditions, reading their journals and whatnot, and he had tracked down where William Hawkins had been buried. In, I think it was in Eden, Arizona. Not quite sure, but Art wanted to pick up a rock from the summit of Hawkins Butte and bring it to Hawkins' grave in Eden, Eden, Arizona. So, yeah, that was a secondary objective on his, which I found out about after we got there, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this was never, he never made a big deal out of this. Right. He just wanted to do this, right? So, but it's a nice little place to be, of course, as all these summits are. And from there, we basically continued to loop around Angel's Gate, going around the west side on the Red Wall Rim, kind of uneventfully. You know, it starts out slow, and then we were able to speed up as we got farther north. I think as the terrace, the Red Wall terrace, got a little bit wider, right? And then eventually came back to the top of the Red Wall ascent route that we had done. Now, at this point, you see, I started thinking ahead here, and I said, you know, our plan had been to go to Vishnu, and the three of us, and the plan was to go on the Tonto.
Okay.
And we didn't have a firm plan to drop down into Clear Creek at the mouth and then go back up to the Tonto on the east side of Clear Creek and then continue on to Vishnu. But we had that as a possibility in the back of our mind, but more likely we're going to just follow the Tonto around, follow the trail into Clear Creek, and then come up on the Tonto platform and follow that around outside of Howland's Butte, mm-hmm. and into Vishnu, which makes for a very long walk,
right.
You know, and especially with you know, packs on for 5 or 6 days. So, but when Art and I were sitting up at the top of this Red Wall break, right next to Angel's Gate, I realized that, you know, it's just like a couple of kilometers of quick Red Wall Rim walking to get you over to Hall Butte, and then you can drop down into Vishnu directly.
Uh-huh.
And so it's like this big shortcut. If you go in, if you're trying to get to Vishnu, you just take the Clear Creek Trail and then climb up the way we'd come up that morning to that notch,
right.
in the Red Wall, and then just continue on the Red Wall Rim for a couple of kilometers past Hall Butte, and then drop down into Vishnu. And
all the while,
you know,
heading east out of Clear Creek, instead of going south onto the Tonto and in and out and in and out and in and out, you basically just go east, northeast a little bit toward Wotan's, and then off to the east.
Yeah,
okay.
That's right. And I had never really appreciated that this might be a route to cut off the cut off the distance. And, you know, partly because I have to say that I was influenced in some respect by Harvey Butchert's writing. He had written an article in, like, Summit Magazine in, like, 1957 or something, you know, and I had found this article and, you know, devoured every word of it and every photograph. And he had described following the Tonto around into Asbestos Canyon, right, from Phantom Ranch. And so I always assumed, well, that's the way one went,
right?
You just follow the Tonto because you know it's going to go.
Right.
But this was a, you know, when we got up here, I realized, hey, this is a big shortcut, you know,
can get you into
Vishnu and other areas. And so we planned on utilizing that, you know, at our next opportunity. But but that wasn't going to happen on this trip, right? So because we wanted to, we had other plans by this point, right? So so this was a pretty full day, you know. By the time we got back down to the east arm of Clear Creek, it was kind of late afternoon, and we went down and rejoined Bruce. And I'm sorry I can't tell you what Bruce did while we were in there, you know, but I know he did do some writing, and he was doing a lot of photography in Clear Creek. So but he was happy, and you know, and we were happy too. So and you know, I think you can see that a theme of the hiking that I've done with Art over the years has been take the backpacks in, drop the backpacks,
right.
and then do as much day hiking as you can,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
With the light loads. And so this was, you know, another great chance to to put the miles on and cover a lot of terrain and get good views and knock off another summit too, Hawkins Butte. Mm-hmm. So very satisfying. And so that was third or fourth day, I guess. Excuse me. And so the next day, we decided that Art and I decided what we would do is hike up, back up the east arm of Clear Creek, and we wanted to look at this drainage that goes up ultimately to the east of Thor Temple. And I could see from the bed of Clear Creek lower down that you could get up through the red wall to the southwest of Thor Temple.
Okay.
I mean, it looked pretty obvious. So just above the junction of the main arm of Clear Creek and the east arm of Clear Creek, there's a big fin of red wall that comes down from the northeast from Thor Temple. And the slope is broken enough on that. At least that's the way it looked from a distance.
Mm-hmm.
But we decided that we wanted to go up the arm that was just east of Thor and see what might be up there, right? Because we had no reports of anybody having ever been up in that area and whatnot, so we didn't know what to find. So we repeated our walk of a couple days earlier and walked back up the east arm of Clear Creek a couple of miles and to that junction with that drainage, and then started up it. And it's one of these hikes where you're at the mouth of the drainage where it joins the east arm of Clear Creek, and it's just boulders and sand and gravel and,
mm-hmm.
you know, a couple of acacias here and there. Nothing extraordinary and nothing to give you a hint of the little splendors that you encounter as you go up into the Red Wall Gully, you know, up into the Red Wall mm-hmm. Canyon. And that's exactly what we found once we got up far enough up this drainage into the Bright Angel Shale, and where all the water, of course, starts coming out, right? And it's just gorgeous flow.
Huh.
Red buds, small cottonwoods,
wow.
you know, just ferns and just really lush vegetation. And I remember we encountered this little copse of pinyon juniper in right along the creek bottom, and we both said this would be a great place to just hang out for like 4 or 5 days, you know, just to just camp, you know, and just loll about in the sun and listen to the creek trickling by and the birds and whatnot. So just really, really beautiful little side canyon. And again, it's, you know, you never would know until you hiked up in there that these treats await you. So, in fact, as we went farther up the canyon towards the Red Wall itself, we looked up to our right, so this would be to the east, and there was a tributary drainage, the one that comes down from east of Honan Point, if you have a map in front of you. And there was actually a waterfall coming over the red wall in this drainage.
Huh.
And you could, you know, it was a fairly significant flow, and you could see it cascading down into the brush and whatnot and rocks at the base of the Red Wall. So we continued up past that though, and then to try to push the route up through the Red Wall, and we got up to the end of as far as we could go. There was a deep cleft in the Red Wall, and it looked to us like you might be able to free climb it on the east side, and we actually started up a little bit, but, you know, our sensibilities got the better of us, and we decided to back off of that. I don't know if anybody's climbed it before. You know, you might be able to climb it, a person with high free climbing capabilities, but it was very exposed, and you wouldn't know how solid things were, and
right.
et cetera. So we didn't have a rope. We weren't going to try anything that we, you know, might get stuck on or anything like that. So we backtracked from that point, and then we tried to get we thought about going in to hike in underneath that waterfall, right, that we had seen just to the east. But after we got a little ways around into that side drainage, we could see that there was no pool underneath the fall.
Hmm.
You know, so many of these red wall overflows, they'll the fall, the water will drop over when it's running. Most of the time it's not, but when it's flowing, it'll drop into a nice pool at the bottom, or at least an open area, right? In the tops of these amphitheaters under the lips of these red wall pour-offs, you sometimes find a big open area, and you know, you would have a pool if the fall was active. But we could see, looking into this drainage, that, you know, this was not the case, that it was just a bunch of boulders of limestone plus lots of brush, and we elected not to hike over and stand in the shower. So, yeah, just continued back down the creek, and it was just a gorgeous little place to be. And and you know, you're so many people go to Clear Creek, you know, and camp there in the campground or adjacent areas, and then they go down to the river or they hike up to Shiava Falls. Right. But just around the corner, you know, there's this splendid little Eden that I'm now telling the world all about.
Right, everybody knows now.
yeah, but it just goes to show you how you know, you can find these little hidden gems, you know, and in many different places in the canyon. So that was a fine day for us, and you know, again, a very relaxing day. I mean, the only day on this trip that was serious was the Angels Butte walk. And when I say serious, I mean just like a long day, right? Mm. We got a lot of opportunity on this trip to loll about in the sun and relax and chat. And so that was pretty nice. And by the time we got back, it was afternoon, and we talked about how to proceed, right? And at that point, Bruce was feeling better about his back, but not great. And so we thought, well, look, maybe the best thing to do here is to split our return to the rim into 2 days.
Okay.
And we will spend another night at Sumner Wash, as we did coming in, right? And that way it's easier for Bruce to get back out in 2 days. Well, all of us actually are going to benefit from that. So we agreed to do that, and which meant the next day we wouldn't have to get up too early, right?
Right.
So, because we were just going to be going to Sumner Wash. And so the next day we did get up, and fairly early. And Art and I decided we were going to go to Sumner Wash by going down Clear Creek. And so our objective was to go down to hike down Clear Creek to the mouth, and then hike downstream to Zoroaster Canyon, and then go up that to join the Clear Creek Trail.
That doesn't sound like fun.
Well, it sounds fun to us, right?
Like, knowing that country, I'm like, geez, this is steep schist in there.
Well, you probably, I'm sure you know it better than I do, because I have not been. I've been to the mouth of Clear Creek several times.
Yeah,
but I have never gone down river from there.
Mm.
But we knew that we could get out of out of Clear Creek in other places if there was a problem, right? So.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we did. And so we shouldered our packs in the morning and had a nice kind of relaxing hike. And because the stream was, because it was spring.
Was Bruce going to go direct to Sumner?
So Bruce was going to take the trail.
Okay, great.
Yeah, so Bruce would take the trail to Sumner Wash.
Okay.
And then we would meet him there, right? Or somewhere on the trail.
Yeah.
So our plan was to come up Zoroaster and intersect the trail there.
Yeah.
Which is about, I don't know, 2 miles from Sumner Wash, something like that. And Art and I are heading downstream with our backpacks on, and we're just kind of wading the stream because, you had to, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It was just too difficult to stay dry, dry feet, and which, you know, helps you stay cool, of course. But by the time we got to the climb around in Lower Clear Creek.
There's a waterfall in there, and you have to skirt a pretty sketchy, slippery piece of schist to get around that waterfall. How did you do that?
Yeah, that's right. And it's about, I guess it's about 30 feet of a waterfall, and you basically have to, as you point out, you got to trust your soles. And, I mean, there's holds all the way, and I did this in 73, the first time I'd been into Clear Creek, and went down there with those two friends of mine. I went down to the river that day and had no problem with the climb around. But this time, with the wet shoes, we felt really unnerved by this this climb. And so we tried it a couple times and just couldn't commit to it. And so we said, well, let's backtrack here and go out a slightly different way. So, which is what we did. If you just go upstream from there, you know, a short distance, you can actually work your way up through the schist.
Yes.
Close to, well, you can work your way pretty much up to the base of the Tapetes. And it's just a steep schist climb, you know, and so we worked our way up, and there's a up to a ridge that's between Zoroaster and Clear Creek.
Yes.
But still below the Tapete sandstone.
Yes.
And from there, I left Art, and I walked out on that ridge to the south because I wanted to climb this really fantastic-looking Tapete's Butte out there.
Yeah, there's this little button out there.
Yeah, it's more than a little button, actually. But, I've always called it Zoroaster's Pyre. I don't know why. Because it's in Zoroaster Canyon, you know, or actually on the ridge between Zoroaster and Clear Creek. But it's unnamed. But it's quite spectacular, and you can see it, you know, from many points on the south rim, looking across. And when you're hiking by on the Clear Creek Trail, you get great good views of it too. So, you know, I'd wanted to climb this thing for some time, and so I headed out, and initially I headed around the west side of it, and it's all pretty sheer sandstone. But when you get to the south side, there's really nice chimneys and ledges that you can connect and link up.
Nice.
And, you know, one of these with big stems, you know, where you're in these Tapete's sandstone chimneys or gullies, and you're doing these big, wide stems, you know, with your feet spread way out and your hands spread way out, and you just, like, step from one sandstone ledge up to the next, work your way up spider-wise. I remember it was just very, very straightforward and very fun, you know, and really spacious on top. And I could look to the north. And I could see Art there on the waiting for me on the ridge, you know. And we waved our hats back and forth, and it was pretty. It was very satisfying because I had wanted to climb that thing for many many years after having seen it from one of my earliest Grand Canyon hikes. So actually, from my first Grand Canyon hike with Chris, and so I went back down then and work my way back over to Art, and then we followed. You can work your way through using deer trails into the bed of Zoroaster Canyon.
Right.
There was a little bit of a down climb there. I remember was a technical thing, and what impressed me of Zoroaster Canyon, two things. Number one, there was beautiful flow of water in there with just wonderful taste to it, you know, and I'm sure it's ephemeral. It's not permanent, but it was so nice to encounter that. And then there's these beautiful lags of conglomerate of Zoroaster granite boulders in the Tapete sandstone at the base, at its contact on the granite. So you can see how the granite from the Zoroaster granite and the Vishnu schist, you know, the granite intrudes the schist, right? And you can see where big cobbles of this granite had been eroded off the schist, or out of the schist, and eroded off the surface, and then incorporated in the basal sediments of the Tapete sandstone.
Oh, that's neat.
You know, it's kind of a deep beach deposits, right?
Yeah, so it was
just, it's a beautiful geological illustration, right? And I mean, a lot of people maybe just would walk right by it and not care, but it's a very great example of the type of geological features you would see at an unconformity like that, you know. And I was thinking this is Zoroaster Canyon, so it must be the type locality of the Zoroaster granite, which explains, you know, I mean, that explains a lot because there is a lot of granite in that canyon, and it's very well exposed.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I've never looked into that, whether that is the actual type locality of the the unit, but I suspect it probably is. Otherwise, it must be displayed very well in the Zoroaster Canyon area of the Inner Gorge. That's why they named it that way. So, anyways, we crossed Zoroaster Canyon and then went up to the trail. And in fairly short order, we found Bruce's. We asked him to leave us notes at various places on the trail to tell us if he'd been there or not, right?
Good.
So Art went one way and I went the other way. And within 10 minutes, we'd run into Bruce's notes. And so we reconvened and continued on to meet Bruce at Sumner Wash. And so at Sumner, this was going to be our last night. And we had a relaxed evening at the same spot we had been in at the start of the trip. And the next day, we just had to get out, you know, the South Kaibab Trail, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in the morning, Art and I got up and we thought, well, let's take a couple hours and go climb Sumner Butte, right?
Okay.
It's right there. It should be a piece of cake. And and Bruce can get a head start on us, and then we'll meet up at the rim. And so we started up, Art and I. I didn't even bring water because I thought it's only going to be a couple hours. You know, it can't take that long. So we started up, and, you know, this was the first time that either of us had gone up that red wall break. And it's, you know, it's nothing straight. There's nothing challenging about it. It's, although if you slip here and there, you know, it could be a nasty position you're in, but you have to be careful, and, you know, it's fairly straightforward route finding. So we got to the top of the red wall and then proceeded out towards the summit of Sumner Butte. Now, Sumner, it really narrows down. Have you done that one?
I have not.
No, well, this is another day hike from the river for you.
Uh-huh.
Yep, but it's a very, very interesting climb because it's a very serrated ridge of limestone.
Hmm.
And, you know, there's a lot of exposure on it, and it's really busted up and loose. And you have to, well, we know now that the best route is kind of along the west side. But, you know, when we were going out there, we had to explore various options going
right
down the east side or the west side, or, you know, which drop do we want to go down? Because you hike out these little towers and you find that there's a big, you know, now it's a 25-foot drop down to the next little call in the ridge, and you got to backtrack. So a lot of back and forth and challenging route finding. But eventually, you know, you pull through and you get to the end there, and there's all sorts of, I shouldn't say all sorts, but there's definitely lots of debris out there indicating that this is a fairly popular destination for visitors to Phantom Ranch and whatnot.
Hmm.
You know, I think a lot of people have gone up there over the years.
Oh, okay. Huh.
And we found the Bradford Washburn,
yes,
you know, summit tripods and whatnot. So the debris from them. I'm surprised that Washburn was allowed to leave all that stuff behind. It's kind of contradictory to, you know, modern-day policies in wilderness areas.
It was definitely a little oversight from somebody.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. So, anyways, the whole round trip took us 4.5 hours.
Oh, wow.
Instead of 2 hours, right? So it was a bigger adventure than we had expected, but it was still a lot of fun, and, of course, another summit. So, I mean, that was pretty much it. We went back down to our camp, and I remember we didn't leave the Phantom Ranch. We kind of relaxed there and ate ice cream and stuff, and then Art and I headed up around 4 o'clock in the afternoon up the Kaibab Trail, and he beat me up by about 40 minutes, which was quite impressive, so it was just a good ending to a great trip. Of course, we met Bruce up there, and who'd been waiting for us at the rim, and then we all headed back to Flagstaff.
Yeah.
So
I've got a question for you about this. Did you guys have a permit on this one?
No.
Okay. All right.
We did not.
Did you run into anybody? Nobody asked you, hey, you don't got a permit? Or you just didn't see anybody there?
Let me see. No, I think there were some campers in Clear Creek at the campground. Just a couple.
Right.
But we went downstream past the campground.
Right.
And then there's a nice area at the junction of the east arm and the main arm where you can kind of relax. And we just Bruce hung out there,
right,
you know, for 4 days.
Right.
But we did camp there for a number of days, and nobody came through or said anything. So
right,
No, it was fairly quiet,
yeah.
You know.
Okay.
Right. I think the only time we've been asked for a permit specifically was, I think I told you the time I was in Grapevine Creek, I believe it was. And,
right.
And they dropped the helicopter on us,
right?
Because they'd
been
searching for a lost hiker. And,
right.
And that time, and then a subsequent hike to this one that, you know, we'll talk about in a few weeks, when Art and I were on the Nanquip Trail. So those are the only two times,
okay.
I think,
right.
that I can remember being specifically asked.
Yeah. Well, it's a really nice area in there.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, again, we talk repeatedly about, I do anyways, about in these sessions, about how, you know, change of plans is you've got to be able to adapt.
Yeah.
And, you know, our original plan had been to go into Vishnu, and because one of our party was not really feeling at, you know, at 100%, we decided to change the plan.
Yeah, that's right.
And you know, a permit would not really allow you to do that. And so it's just one of the things to consider, you know, when you're going hiking in Grand Canyon. And,
yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah. And I would you know, I mean, I know these interviews are going online, and you know, the Park Service personnel may be thinking, wow, this guy's been transgressing for quite a while here. But the reality is, you know, the permit system is as I laud the objectives to control access, but I guess from my perspective, it controls that in too demanding a manner that this kind of wilderness traversing, you know, cannot be undertaken in a spontaneous way or in a necessary way when you have to modify your plans. So
it is interesting when you think about wilderness and then you try to structure a permit for wilderness. So wilderness isn't about structure.
That's a very good point.
And so
that's a very good point.
It's kind of a, but at the same time, the park doesn't want, you know, the reason why they have the permit system is to keep the wilderness contacts at a minimum.
Yes.
So it's just it's what's a manager to do.
Yeah.
It's difficult. So
I agree completely with you there. It's a challenging position to be in as a manager, and I probably would, if I was in their shoes, I would probably set up a similar system. But on a positive note here, I will say that all the times we've gone into these areas, either without a permit or with a permit that we had to modify, you know, without informing the park's personnel, we very rarely ran into anybody.
Right.
You know what I
right.
mean? And so the preservation of the wilderness experience has been maintained even though the permits were not being followed. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah,
so
sure.
I mean, I think that's an important point that, you know, that hopefully the Park Service would contemplate, you know.
Yeah.
I suppose as visitation to these areas just ramps up, I mean, everywhere you go, you're seeing more and more,
that's right.
you know, examples of people going farther afield. And so, you know, in that case, it there's going to have to be some sort of a more controlling system established and enforced. But up until now, you know, I think it's fairly safe to say that these remote areas have continued to remain remote, and which is a, you know, positive thing.
Which is a lovely thing. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, with that, maybe this is a good place to put a comma in this oral history interview. And,
okay.
We will take up the rest of 2005 and points beyond next time.
Okay. Sounds great, Tom.
Well, with that, this will conclude a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Jim Haggart.
Today is Sunday, August 1st,
2021. This is will conclude part 19 of this oral history interview series. My name is Tom Martin, and Jim, thank you so very, very much.
Thanks for the opportunity, Tom. Really appreciate it.